Hello, strong, feisty women. Some of you may recognize my voice. I'm Celine Yeager, host of the Hit Play Not Pause podcast. Throughout my career as a professional health and fitness writer and now a podcaster, I hear countless questions from women who are trying to understand how their ever-changing hormones impact their sports performance. So we decided to serve up some answers in a brand new series called Hormonal that we will be releasing on the Feisty Women's Performance Podcast feed. Throughout this four-part series, reproductive endocrinologist Dr. Carla DiGirolamo and I will be tackling topics like periods, the pill, pregnancy, and conditions like PCOS, all from the perspective of sports performance. If you aren't already, follow the Feisty Women's Performance Podcast and stay tuned for our first episode releasing on April 15th. Also, have questions you want answered? Send us a voice note at speakpipe.com/hormonal and we'll get it answered on the show.
You are listening to the Girls Gone Gravel podcast, a show for women who are chasing their everyday and epic adventures. This podcast is hosted by Christy Moan and me, Katherine Taylor, and powered by Feisty Media. Okay, y'all, I have a really fun episode for you. We've had this planned and the timing didn't work out for a couple of different reasons, but I'm actually really excited because I have Rachel Burnside and she is straight from Paris-Roubaix. Hey, Rachel.
Oh, hi there. Just a quick edit. I actually was not at Paris-Roubaix. I was invited but couldn't go, but a lot of my contacts were there. So I've been getting FOMO. Okay. They've been coming at me.
You've got the whole scoop. Ontario.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I got the whole scoop. They were going live on Instagram. They were sending me pictures. I had the ultimate FOMO from my living room. I got all the lowdown.
Amazing. Okay, well, we're going to get into your story, but I do, like, I want to get, like, how much better was the women's race than the men's race at Paris-Roubaix? Isn't that crazy?
Oh, my God. It was so much better. Well, actually, I suppose that's unfair. Everybody takes different things from it. But oh, yeah, just like the competition element, like the fact that you just did not know what was going to happen, like that totally had me on edge. Whereas, like, of course, Matthew Van Der Poel is totally incredible. But when he's 2.5 minutes clear, even if he gets a puncture or something happens, you know he's going to win. So I was like, towards the end, I was like, this is not as good as the women's.
I know. It's almost like a shame that the women's wasn't second. So you could have had that comparison.
Oh, God, I know, right? Oh, it was brilliant.
Beforehand, but that sprint to the end, that was so crazy.
Oh, my God, like a bat of hell. I was just like, you are absolutely phenomenal. I was, like, fortunate enough to see her in Glasgow at the Worlds, like, 6 months before, which is where my real, like, crush began, because I was very, very fortunate enough to be in the team car and be behind her in the final. And then, so I've been backing her ever since, but I wasn't sure it was going to be hers yesterday, or not yesterday, on Saturday, because part of me was like, oh, Marianne Vos, like, she's 36, like, my heart was with Marianne Vos.
Yeah,
I think it was with Lottie, but yeah, it was epic.
Yeah, Lottie seems to have, like, quite a personality too. Like, I, you know, I don't know anything about her except for what I see on social media, but I've seen some really fun posts and I'm like, I think she has quite a personality, which I think is needed, because women's cycling, at least in Europe, has seemed very, like, everybody be the same for a long time. And now you're starting to see people like Allison Jackson and Lottie, like, have, like, be like, no, I'm an individual.
I was going to say that. I feel like Ali Jackson, like, last year, obviously, like, Saturday wasn't her day, but, like, last year, I felt she was the one that really, like, for the first time, really showed personality. And I feel actually she's done a great thing for women's cycling, because she's sort of helped other people think, oh, it's okay to be, like, myself, be a bit quirky and not be super serious all the time. I also think, just quickly while we're on this, like, how amazing was it when she got the tool from the mechanic's car, and then I think it was her handlebars she was adjusting, Lottie was after the cobbles. I was like, oh my God, I can barely even do that, not on a bike, let alone on a bike. Just incredible.
Yeah, if you weren't able to watch the race, at one point during the race, I can't remember, because we only get 2.5 hours of the broadcast here, so it was pretty early into when we were getting the broadcast, so I don't remember what mile or what kilometer it was at, excuse me, but Lottie pulled back because her handlebars were loose, and so she was adjusting it as she was riding with the tool, and I was taking my bike apart for gravel camp yesterday, and I could barely take my bike apart in my garage. So.
I was like, what an inspiration. So now I'm like, no, I can do this. I can, of course, fix my everything that my bike needs.
Hey, all, it's your editor, Lindsay, here. I want you to get ready to ante up for the Ultimate Gravel Challenge this summer. Join us at the 2024 Trans Rockies Gravel Royale, where adventure awaits in the breathtaking Canadian Rockies. Experience the thrill of a unique 3-day stage race surrounded by stunning scenery on secluded gravel roads in the British Columbia backcountry. With two distance options, the full pint or half pint distances, there's a challenge for every level of rider. And forget about logistics, Trans Rockies has you covered. Fully supported with tents, meals, aid stations, technical support, and even massage services, so all you have to do is focus on the ride. You'll stay at the picturesque Nipica Mountain Resort, nestled in the heart of the Rockies, and celebrate your achievements with daily podium awards, group dinner, and custom designed memorabilia. After the ride, you can unwind at Chillville with cold refreshments, music, games, and camaraderie with your fellow riders. Don't miss out on this epic adventure. Register now at transrockiesgravelroyale.com and use the code GGG24GR100 to save $100 off your entry. The link and discount codes will be in the show notes of this episode. Embrace the challenge, conquer the gravel, and create memories that will last a lifetime. So go all in with us for Trans Rockies Gravel Royale this August.
If you are looking to buy or sell a bike, I have got a great deal for you. We have partnered with Bicycle, which is spelled B-U-Y-C-Y-C-L-E, and you can find them at bicycle.com. They have over 20,000 pre-owned and refurbished road, gravel, mountain, and triathlon bikes available. It's a global marketplace, so you're going to find bikes from all over the world, from very low-level entry price to very high top-end bikes. And right now, you're going to be able to save $100 on your purchase if you use Girls Gone Gravel at checkout. The other exciting thing is they make it really easy if you're trying to sell a bike. I know that we're all a little sketchy about listing something on Facebook Marketplace, and are we going to meet somebody in a weird parking lot, and are they going to try to scam us? This makes it super easy. You just go on, you create an account, you're going to put the make, model, and year of your bike, and it's going to upload all the information about components, everything on your bike, take a few good pictures, list it, and then when your bike sells, they're going to send a box to your house and arrange for pickup. It's very easy, a great place to find bikes. So head on over to bicycle.com, use that code GIRLSGONEGRAVEL for $100 off your purchase.
Yeah, oh, that's amazing. Well, we might get into Paris-Roubaix a little bit more when we talk about what's happening in the women's space, but let's get to know you a little bit, Rachel. So I'm really excited. We're getting ready to do a big project together at Sea Otter. And as we were chatting, I was like, oh, we should try to get you on the podcast. So we are actually, this is coming out tomorrow. We're recording today. It's coming out tomorrow. That doesn't usually turn around that quickly on the podcast. So if there are any weird edits, everybody just please, we apologize for it. Oh, and then Christy's also on the road to gravel camp. So that's why she's not here today. So she is driving herself into the, we know we're having a big eclipse here in the US today. So that's the other exciting thing. So she's driving straight into the eclipse. But Rachel, tell us a little bit about you and how you got into the cycling industry, how you, your passion for bikes. I don't even know. Do you ride? Like, what's your history on the bike?
Yeah, so, currently I'm head of marketing at Shift Active Media, and we're a data-driven marketing agency for cycling in the great outdoors, and that's where I'm kind of at now. But my journey to this point is quite a long one. I guess I've been super fortunate. So first of all, I do ride bikes. I ride road, Zwift. I also have Peloton, which haters going to hate, but we'll maybe get into that later. So yeah, like I've been fortunate enough to always have a bike. My dad is really into cycling, more watching actually than taking part. But when we were younger, my sister and I were incredibly lucky to always have bikes. So it's kind of always been like with us. I mean, we always had a mountain bike. It didn't matter whether you were going up a mountain or not. I feel kids' bikes were always sort of like mountain
yeah.
bikes. So yeah, and then I then So I just like rode like family wise. And then I stopped, like that classic thing when you go to school and uni, like it's just kind of gets a little bit parked. Then when I started working, I started to commute by bike. So I was really not getting paid particularly well. And that was far more cost effective for me to get to A to B. And then I was like, oh, okay, this is actually quite good, quite enjoying this. And weirdly, like when I first started my job as a graduate, like one of the sort of senior members on the team was really into cycling, but like really into it, like Lycra level at that point. Like when I was commuting, I went over in Lycra. And I remember she had these like crazy like jerseys that she used to wear with like Heinz baked beans. I don't know if that's a British thing or whether you're familiar with Heinz baked beans.
We do know Heinz baked beans, but we don't eat them on toast.
Oh, that's yeah, exactly. On toes, like making your bread all soggy. Well, she had this Heinz baked bean jersey. And I just remember thinking, right, she's so into this, like clipping into this bike. Like, this is a different level to me. Anyway, I guess that was my first encounter with it, which it means it's or with it at a sort of like serious level. And then, like, you know, my life sort of like moved on. I did continue to ride a road bike, but at this point I wasn't clipping in. And then when I started my next job, weirdly, like, the girl that worked on my team was really into cycling and her husband was a journalist at Cyclist magazine. And she was like, you need to like you could be good at this. Like I've seen you commute to work, like you could do better than just commuting to work should you choose to. So I feel like cycling's then always kind of been with me. So then I did then really get into it. My husband and I got really into it because of this girl that I worked with. And then the job at Shift came up. And I was like, well, I don't know if I'm like hardcore enough for this job. Although at that point I wasn't Lycra, I was clipping in, I did have two bikes. And then I got here so 7 years ago and it's been like catapulted into like cycling is pretty much like my cycling is my sport. I used to be a runner, but now I cycle all the time. Like I cycle before work, like I was out this morning, cycle the weekend, I go on cycling holidays, and I work with some of the leading cycling brands in the world on a day-to-day basis, and I count myself incredibly, incredibly lucky. I think, yeah, cycling's kind of always been with me. It's just been on this sort of massive journey of getting more and more, more and more into it. And now you'll be glad to know that I'm in the market for a gravel bike. Nice. So I've hit that point now. I'm like, it's time for taking it to the next level. So yeah, that's kind of my journey to cycling. And I'm forever grateful to my parents at that young age, like getting me a bike, because I know it's not, that's a luxury that not everybody can have. My cycling.
I love that. I got my haircut Friday. I was talking to my hairdresser and she's a 2-year-old about, he has a little balance bike, and about how so few kids are getting on bikes now. They're using scooters. And we're like, it's just like you're losing a life skill that I think so many people don't realize they wanted to know that life skill until they get later and they find that cycling is a great sport. But then it's intimidating if you've never learned how to ride.
I know. And, you know, I was thinking a lot about this, like over the past couple of like weeks as well, because I think that, like, I guess going back to like watching like elite racing, and like, I know elite racing is very different to commuting and getting from A to B. But sometimes I almost think like if you can watch elite racing and you see these people like doing what they're doing, which quite often looks incredibly scary, it's like, but then you've also seen the person like commute down the bike path or whatever. It kind of makes you think, oh, that like could be for me. And I think quite often like the elite side of things is quite separate to the commuting side. But I think if the elite side is looking scary, then actually maybe the other part might be okay. And it might encourage people to dabble in it a little bit more. Cause I suppose that was kind of my journey. Like my dad always had the tour on, like he had all the books. He was always talking about it. I never thought that could be for me, but it didn't put me off getting on a bike and being sort of like nervous about it. That's a bit of a ramble on that point, but it's something that's been sort of on my mind, thinking about what are the parallels between elite racing, because that's what's going to help us grow potentially the sport as a whole. So that was a ramble.
I'm looking
for all angles to use all parts of cycling to grow it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously this was a massive sports weekend in the United States. I mean, we were, a lot of us were glued to Paris-Roubaix, but you know, there was a little thing called the Final Four and the national championship game happening in college basketball. So I don't know if you all follow what's been going on in women's college basketball.
Well, they covered it on, I read a little bit about it. And then actually, because I've been fortunate enough through the last couple of like months to meet so many of like you guys, a lot of you, like my now American cycling friends, a load of you guys were sharing it on social. So then it did actually start to have that halo effect where I was seeing some bits and pieces.
Yeah, but one of the best quotes that I saw that came out of this weekend was women's sports have always been dynamic and competitive. We've just never been able to see it. So
Love it. That
I
is
was
so
like,
good.
that's so true. Like, how many people, how many like finishes, like, yesterday have we missed on women's cycling, or Saturday we missed on women's cycling, or how many, basketball phenoms have we missed over the years because we just weren't able to see it?
Totally. No, I love that. It's so true. I know I was also, again, like kind of like jumping in on this point, but I was also thinking about this when I was watching the racing at the weekend, because I've also GCN Plus, which is like one of our sister cousin company. And I never paid for that. And I was really lucky that I just had that and I had racing at my fingertips. And then GCN Plus, you can't access that anymore. So I then had to sign up for Eurosport. And I was like, £7, which isn't like a lot, but to sign up to the account and stuff like that. And I was like, God, that's me. Like, that's me who works in cycling. Like, for all the people that don't work in cycling, like, that's a bit of a like jump to do that alongside your Netflix and everything else.
Yeah, it is true. And I do think, I mean, being in marketing, that's one of the reasons. I just think it's so important that the things that we do on social media and the way we are able to promote people, because that's where people can follow it, and especially things that are longer, like bike racing, where I'm not necessarily sitting at my house all day Saturday to watch a bike race, right? But I can follow along with what's happening on stories and social media. And it's one of my very big pet peeves, right? When a bike race, and they always have great intentions. I know it's harder to cover the women, but when they'll have like five posts about the men for every one post about the women.
Don't even get me started. Like, I noted that over the weekend as well, because I feel like I've just been doing a load of research for like everything that's coming up between like us and our like partners that we're working with for Sea Otter, and just kind of exploring what's going on out there. And like, it was crazy how much I noticed that. Like, one post, maybe no post for the women versus like, yeah, five for the men. And it's that kind of thing. It's like, if men only keep seeing more men winning, they're not even thinking about this sport potentially being for women, and they're not thinking about like how it could be for their daughter or their grandchild if the media owners are only continuing to post about the fact that this is like potentially a male sport. You can see where my mind's been going lately thinking about all this.
Yeah. Well, that's a good jumping off point to you started an organization called Uplift, and we're quite excited. We're going to be launching that out at Sea Otter, but tell us where that came from and what it is and where it came from.
Yeah, perfect. So about 6 months ago, I launched Uplift, which is a new mentoring program set up to match experienced female leaders in the cycling industry with like the next generation of talent that are coming through. So 6 months ago was when we launched it. It's kind of been in the making for sort of 3 months or so prior to that. And it was really born from the fact that prior to working in cycling, I was not in cycling, and I had like witnessed there was some mentor programs and stuff flowing around. I was never really part of them, but when I came to shift, I realized that actually there wasn't such a thing. And I was really fortunate actually that I was given a mentor when I got here. So like all those nearly 7 years ago, because like the business had realized there isn't a lot of women here for me to like tap into and get expertise from and ultimately help me where I may need help. By the way, I'm not saying for a minute that men can also be mentors. I think it's always really important to make that clear, but actually they addressed that like in a very, very male dominated environment, it would be really important for me just to have another woman to speak to. So and she's still my mentor all these years later. And then laterally to that, I'd then been talking about like could have been doing with some mentoring, and there was a program outside of the cycling industry which I was enrolled onto. So I got a couple of mentors who were more mainstream marketing, not sport necessarily. And it was really good. And I thought, you know what, like the cycling industry could really do with something like that. Because sort of like 3 months prior to the programming set up, a couple of my clients had said to me, like, oh, do you know any other women, particularly actually in social media? Like, do you know any like senior women in social media? Because I'd really love to like pair up some of my teams so that they can start to learn and get experience and just run problems and stuff, or things to get solutions by with them. And I was like, I actually don't really know anyone. Like, I know of people sort of dotted around, but I don't have like one big pool of people. So yeah, Uplift was then born. And you know, I realized that there's a lot of people doing a lot of amazing things within the cycling industry, be it grassroots or lobbying from an urban mobility point of view, or people setting up groups like Rebecca, who we're working with at the moment, the Sea Otter event, like setting up different events to get more people into the sport. But actually, I realized that there didn't seem to be so many people at that sort of like business level, potentially building a community to be able to help one another. And I suppose I was pretty fortunate with the clients that I work on here to know quite a few of those women in senior positions, and actually thought, you know what, this is maybe my time to try and bring the people that I know together to try and help that next generation who are hungry to learn. They want to stay within the cycling industry. They've got a lot to offer. But actually at points, they're going to need just a little bit of help, maybe from somebody who's not their male boss. But again, I want to just like highlight that point that like most of my career I've had senior male bosses, and like they've been amazing for me. Like, but I just knew myself, sometimes it was quite nice just to speak to another woman. But who's to say that the next round of Atlas won't have male mentors? But for the moment, it's very much a connecting like women with other women within the industry.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, it's something I know. I wish Christy were able to be here today because she would be all over this. It's both of us have seen it. I worked for a little while at a big, it was an online tri-store. It was one of the largest online tri-stores. I did their marketing about 6 or 7 years ago, and, you know, did a lot with USA Triathlon, and just have seen for years, like how women in the industry, there's so many amazing women doing amazing work, and they can feel really isolated. And just like they don't, and I'm like, but there's somebody else doing their same job, because I get to meet like all these different women, and they're so busy and they're working so hard. And women just bring a different perspective when you're sitting at the table. I mean, I think that is one of cycling's biggest barriers, is the lack of diversity, and not just women, right? Like people of color. And it's because that's why this sport has always been so middle-aged male dominated, because that's who's working in it.
Totally. And I think that like, I'm now, God, I feel like I'm just talking so much about Powery Babe. I think this is an example that ties back to like a live example of why I believe that like uplift is so important. And to your point, like having women in those senior positions, is that Zwift obviously sponsored that the women's event. Like Kate, who we're again working with at Sea Otter, who's director of women's strategy there, which first of all is an incredible position that a business like has that role. And then the way they activated the event, so obviously sponsoring it, being there, like the content that came out of it, like Kate was like, in my opinion, like queen of that event. And without her championing the fact that it's super important to sponsor that event, that even just having like Musettes and stuff there to have the brand out there to show that you're supporting it is so important. And actually it really, in my opinion, worked really, really well for Zwift. It felt like, I'm sure it funded a large part of the event. I don't actually know the ins and outs of that detail, but would that have been the case if Kate hadn't been in that position, like pushing that agenda to make sure that happens? And like, we all got to enjoy an epic day of sport. And I think, you know, if I look at it now, I'm like, Kate for me is like the prime example of why uplift is so important, to have people like that in these positions to champion it, bring different perspectives, like challenge things and continue to believe, I guess, in what we all do and take it to the boardroom. So yeah, that's to your point, I just think it is super, super important. And it's amazing that Zwift have got that position there. Like,
yeah.
And long may they continue to support that race and the Tour de France Femme Avec Zwift.
Yeah, I think it's so key. And it's almost, you know, there's the media side of it, there's the elite side of it, and then there's the industry side of it. And I feel like we've been putting so much work on the media and the elite side of things, and we see that on the rise, but the industry has to rise with it, because those are the people. Like, you can do only so much on this elite and media side, and if the industry's not rising with it, you're just going to like constantly be fighting that battle when you don't have key decision makers like Kate in those roles that are advocating. They have the money to support these things.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing, exactly. And it's almost like when times arguably are a little bit tougher in the category than they obviously have been in the past couple of years, it's of course like when people get into the boardroom or like important meetings and are discussing things, they're going to be talking probably about like the bottom line, like the numbers and stuff like that. And if there isn't somebody in there who's also championing like how important these other things are, be it sponsoring events, but also be it like retaining your staff, like what are you doing to make women want to stay working there, like all of that conversation is just so important that you have that different perspective. Obviously now I'm talking about women diversity goes far beyond that as well. I guess I've kind of like for this moment like picked my battles just now, and I'm hoping that like together we'll build a bigger community that can take this bigger and be diverse beyond just women.
Yeah, I think so. And there's a lot of, you know, there are a lot of great people doing some amazing diversity work in the industry as well.
Hopefully we'll all get to come together. I think we are going to come together, but hopefully even more so, like ongoing come together and actually put all our efforts together and do something even bigger.
Yeah. So we'll just, if you're going to be at Sea Otter, you should come join us. So Rachel's going to be on a panel at the Sea Otter Summit with some really rad women. Do you want to tell folks about that?
Yeah, sure. So yeah, Sea Otter Summit on the Wednesday, I'll be running a panel talk with four women from the cycling and the outdoors industry. So Kate from Swift, as I mentioned, we've got Celia from Goo, we've got Nicole from Mammut, and also we're fortunate enough to have Michelle from Lifetime Events, who are the people behind Sea Otter, Unbind and Big Sugar and many other events over in the US. So yeah, we'll be doing a panel talk, which is very much focused on bringing to light the opportunity of having a diverse workforce, which like we know most people know that anyway. So actually what this will be about is just sort of giving some like tips and recommendations from our own experience to the leaders within the room. Like, how do we retain women employees? Like, how do we encourage more women to join? And how can actually like males in particular be allies for the women in the workforce and help us to rise and, you know, rise to the opportunity and be what we can be. So that's, yeah, that's on the... yeah, the Wednesday afternoon. So I'm super excited about that one. This one's going to be, I've done this a sort of couple of times. It's normally been a predominantly women audience, but actually in this instance, we've got more males. So it's very much about helping everyone uncover that opportunity, and all genders are more than welcome.
Awesome. And then on Thursday, which day are we doing it?
We've been on a journey with this one. We're Good Friday, aren't we?
Friday. It's just really early for me. My brain's on.
Yeah. Yes.
So Friday afternoon from 4 to 6. So it's right after the Grand Prix award ceremony. Yes. So the race is that day, the Fuego XL. And then after that award ceremony, we're going to have a happy hour for any woman in the industry with a panel conversation. But really the purpose is like, there are so many rad women that are working all of these, for all these brands at Sea Otter. It's at the end of the day. So if you're one of those women, you can just come on by, even if you can't get out of your booth until closer to 5 when the booths close, you can just come on by, have a drink and meet some other women and just hear a little bit about what's going on from these amazing panelists. You're leading the panel. What are we going to be talking about on that? Or what is it going to be talking about?
Yeah. So, weirdly, my phone just picked up Siri there. So I don't know if you could hear that. Sorry, everyone. I'm just going to turn it off. It's never done that before. It must be your accent. The live panel. Yeah. So this one, here we go again, another live panel, but don't worry, this one's slightly different. It's a little more of a sort of conversation, but actually like I pitch it to people or describe it rather as like live mentoring. That sounds a bit grim and not fun for a happy hour, so I promise you it'll be more fun than that. But basically like we'll just like chat to the panel, get some advice and some of like the challenges and stuff that they've faced over like the past couple of years, and give everyone who's there just like some advice and some tips. Like I have learned so much from hosting some of these panel talks. Like one of my favorite ones, which may or may not come out because it's a different panel talk, but like when you're in the room and let's say you're the only woman and you want to be listened to, like stand up and talk and don't get yourself talked over, because you're actually then taller and you feel confident, which is one of my favorites. And one of the other ones that I learned in one of my other talks was about when you're asked the opinion of like women's cycling on a certain subject matter. And if you are the, in fact, the only women, bring chairs into the room and pretend you've got other women around you to sort of make the point that, like, how can one person have an opinion on all of this? And actually the fact that there is only one woman that can be asked is obviously far from ideal. I haven't tried bringing lots of chairs into a room yet, but maybe one day. But yeah, sort of things like that, just some like tips and things that people have sort of used in their careers to date to get them where they are so that anyone in the room can tap into them. And I think as well, like, as much as we're talking about sort of women in the industry point of view, I think Rebecca Rush, am I saying Rush correctly?
Yes. Yeah.
Rush. Okay, sorry. Not how offensive she'll be. Oh gosh.
It's okay. That's probably how you say rushing around in England.
Yeah, I know. Sorry, my pronunciation. And I'm Scottish as well, so my pronunciation is all over the place. But also, I think Rebecca made a really, really good point. She was like, athletes are businesses as well, even more so now than ever before, because you've got partnerships with brands, collabs, etc. So actually, in a lot of those situations, the advice is also just as useful, because you are still in conversations with different partners about different things where you want to stand your ground and prove that you are worth X, Y, and Z. So yeah, it's absolutely for everyone. It's not just people within sort of like, not necessarily desk positions. I wouldn't say that we do many desk positions in cycling, but it's for everybody to hopefully come and pick something up.
I think anybody that wants to see more women in the cycling industry, come to this event.
Yes, exactly. And we've got a good panel as well. As mentioned, we've got on that one, we've also got Kate from Zwift. We've got Rebecca joining us as well. And we've got Lisa Bourne. So yeah, that one's going to be super exciting.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about that day. And really, we all came together over, I have been talking to Rebecca's people. We're working on another project together, a podcast that we're going to be launching in the fall through Feisty. And I was just talking one day to Era, who's her COO, and just saying, well, this is something like when we were at Seattle last year, Sarah and I, our CEO of Feisty, were like, we need to have a women's event because there are all these women. And I happened to see your panel. Like, we all came together at the same time. And it was just like, oh, all these things are coming together. And so we don't want this to be a one-off. We're hoping this becomes just the beginning of a space to connect more women in this industry, because they're so smart. All the women in this industry are so smart and so tuned in. And I think, like, if we're able to come together and know who each other are and depend on each other more, we're gonna take over. It's my secret.
Totally. And also, like, you say, like, everyone is like smart, unless of course they are, but I then feel even smarter when I speak to you guys, because you learn something else. And I think that that's a lot of like what Uplift is, but it's why, like, connecting with different people along the way and like learning about their background and what they do and who they know just instantly makes you feel a bit more smarter, more confident. Like I was saying to you just before this podcast, like, I've had the luxury of working with you guys for like, what, 2 or 3 weeks now, and I just feel like my head is like filled with a whole load of new information, I guess new excitement for different things. So I'm hoping that we can bring that to real life in Monterey and beyond.
Yeah, I was telling somebody on my team, I was like, this is like, and I work with a team of all really turned on, like tuned in women. I was like, this is like a power women's team. When we had some of our calls, I was like, it's just like a powerhouse team. So I'm pretty excited about it. If you're not going to be at Seattle, but this is still something that's interesting, you can reach out the Girls Gone Gravel Instagram or email me. I think most everybody that listens to this podcast has figured out how to get in touch with me. We're just looking at what are other things we can do, whether it's like a casual happy hour at events or different things, you know, or like maybe you have an idea or a vision of what you'd like to see. We'd love to hear it because I think this definitely is going to become its own thing over the next couple of years. So
yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited to hear what people suggest as well. We had a couple of suggestions in London of the people that came along to the meetup about like different rides and stuff like that. And I know it's really simple, right? Like, sounds simple, organize a ride. But actually, when you don't have the community in the first place to even find to do the ride, it's problematic. So actually, post that event, a couple of the people have gone away and organized rides and things like that. And then who knows how that might then like expand. And hopefully, yeah, after our first event in the US, little cohorts of people will get to know each other. We had actually like some of the mentors and mentees met up over at Powery Bay, which for me was amazing. I was like, oh my God, that's so nice. Like they've all connected. Then they actually introduce someone to someone else and they're doing a little activation together because someone works at one of the other brands. And I'm like, this is it. Like, this is what it's all about. Like, and we're just going to take it big.
Maybe we need like just to plan that for 2025, a massive Paris-Roubaix meetup. We'll take out, bring all of our US people over.
I literally like between Tour of Flanders the week before and Paris-Roubaix, like I could not believe how many people that I know had gone out to those races. Like even in previous years, like not that many people, not many of my clients or even people that I know in the industry had gone. So I think that's like, for me, actually, that was quite an interesting observation to see. Actually, they've all gone to be at the heart of these races. Obviously, majority of people I know are like marketing people, but I thought that was quite an interesting pivot in terms of where brands actually are focusing, where they're immersing themselves, particularly for this year and beyond. So hopefully it lasts and next year we can all, or even this year, you got to come over for for Tour de France Femme, Yvette Zwift.
I think Kelly and Sarah from my team might be there for a few days. I will be at Leadville.
Okay.
They fall on top of each other this year because of the Olympics. So
it's a massive year.
I know. I really want to see that finish up Alpe d'Huez, but I just think it's a lot. But
2025. That'll be our year.
2025 is going to be our year. Well, I know we're bumping up kind of against our time and I want to respect your time because you're still at work. But I wanted to ask, like, what do you see kind of as the trends? This is a very simple question. What do you see? What do you think is happening for women in the industry? What are the trends or what do you hope we're going to see in the next 5 years?
Okay. So yeah, I guess if we're talking about women in the industry, which is obviously like my area of expertise or sort of expertise in terms of people who are women working within the industry, like I think the honest truth is we're going to have to get ourselves out of 2024 as an industry at a total level. Like I think, you know, the headwinds post-pandemic of 2023, like it's not been as pretty as it was. I think we've all kind of experienced that across the board. Although in saying that, I think the elite side of things and the enthusiast side of cycling has been better this year to date so far. But I think there's a lot of challenges that businesses have got to get over. And I think it will take us to the end of the year to get through that. And I think the reason why I'm saying that is because from a women's cycling point of view, like obviously when there's these challenges that need to get overcome, like stock that needs to get moved, et cetera, like that's going to be the number one focus. Like if brands and businesses can't shift a lot of that, like it's going to be really hard for them to make it to 2025 and beyond. But let's, for the purpose of this, answering this question, let's assume we get to 2025 and things are like in a good place. I'm hopeful that people will start to see the opportunity in women's cycling. But I think, when I talk about women's cycling, I'm talking about like a women's elite cycling, not sort of like the commuting side of things, but sort of more so my area. I'm hopeful that there'll have been some like green shoots coming through that actually, like for example, like the RAFA Women's 100 had their best year ever last year. Mm-hmm. And like, I know from a lot of the data and stuff that I spend time with, like we are seeing increase in women looking at cycling related products. They don't always necessarily buy, like that's kind of looking at the last 3 months, but there's green shoots there and the stuff that we're doing, the things we're even talking about just now, I'm just hoping that the industry can see that this can take off if everybody continues to collaborate and work together to grow it across all the different like areas of cycling. And then hopefully if we can get to that point that we can then all start to sort of activate it more. There'll be more money to spend. There'll be more belief. Like, I think it's probably quite hard just now for people to put their money where their mouth is. Like, I think that's why Zwift is amazing. Like, they've really put their money, like what they believe in with like Kate and everything that they're doing. And there's many other brands, Liv are a good example of that as well. But we almost need more people doing more of that. Like, yeah. And that means that we need to get out of this year and then build cohorts of people, male allies, which is a lot of like what we talk about in Uplift Live. Like it's super important that males like work with the females within the business or the women within the business, and then more women come in so they continue to champion it, have the people who are really pushing it, and then hopefully like it will thrive. I think like if we don't have that, like we will struggle. So that's like why I guess in part like Uplift as a small part of this question exists. That wasn't a particularly accurate answer because I get asked this question a lot. And if somebody could tell me that women's cycling was going to be where we'd all make our millions and billions, I'd be a very rich person. But at the moment, it's like collaborating with other people, with other brands, like people working together to try and prove that this can be and help it be. Because I'm a strong believer that women's cycling can get to a neater 50-50% split, but it takes all of us working together, even competitors as well. Like two bike brands work together. Like, let's help do this together. Like, let's not compete against each other. Because if we all compete against each other, then it's kind of going to end up being a race to the bottom.
Yeah. I ended up listening to this podcast yesterday with Greg LeMond, who was the first American, I believe, to win the Tour de France. But it was like in the 80s, right? And the popularity of men's cycling that exploded from Greg LeMond winning the Tour. And I just think, when people are like, women don't buy, I'm like, but you haven't actually tried to market to them or give it a sport. Like, it's just been in the last 4 or 5 years that we've even really been having this conversation and marketing to women. And for men, like, this has been like the thing since really you could start seeing the Tour televised. And so you can't just, it's just like basketball. Like, we were talking about that. It's like they're holding the WNBA to the same standards as the NBA, where they've invested millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars since the beginning of the NBA. And they're like, well, the women don't make money. Like, but you haven't invested, right?
Exactly. Like, and that's the thing. And I know, I feel like we have talked about like Pyro Bay quite a lot, but like, heaven forbid that like and Tour de France by MFX Swift aren't able to be televised and people can't see. Like, it's simple and it's like an overused statement, but you got to see it to believe it can be for you. And like, to the other point, if like the media aren't talking about it, then, and it's not on TV, then people aren't going to see it and think for a minute that it might ever be for them. And then they almost see the negative of it, which is like, particularly in the UK, like from an urban mobility point of view and commuting point of view, like it only ever seems to get bad press. Like, it's rare that anyone's talking anything remotely positive about someone getting from A to B on their bike. So actually we've kind of created this bit of a fear culture, which is also equally not ideal, which is why I guess I kind of honed in right at the start on that like elite side of the sport. Like, I think that's probably part of what we as a collective and the people that we know can control just now. So hopefully like we can all just like collaborate, work together and put the best case forward to get investment and back why it's so important to televise it, to have media talk about it, to have journalists turn up to the event, to have photographers there creating content, etc. That's the dream.
Yeah. And I think for people that are listening that are like, well, I just ride my bike, I think it's also like you being a fan of people is really important. And I know so many people that I've talked to over the years that have been like, oh, I just was riding and now I started watching cycling and I'm a massive fan of it. And so, you know, when people are like, what can I do with this issue? It's like, support the brands that support women's cycling. Share their content, like share the content of the women, be a fangirl.
Totally. Like, that's it. That is exactly it. Like, honestly, some of the mentors that are on the program, like, I was such a fan of them. I couldn't believe they replied to my email and said that they want to be in the program. So I was like crushing on them beforehand, barely even knew some of them. And they were like, yeah, I'm all for this. And I was like, oh my God, I love you even more.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to take up more of your time because I know you're at work, but we'll get to catch up with each other at Seattle. So maybe we'll get a little bit more after you've seen some of the U.S. cycling scene. Maybe we'll get a little interview with you at Seattle. But tell us where folks can find more information about you and about Uplift.
So you can find more information on Uplift over on the Shift website. So shiftactivemedia.com/Uplift. There's some information on there. We've got an Instagram page, uplift.mentoring.program. Obviously, Uplift in isolation was taken. And then you can find us over on LinkedIn. And then, yeah, you can find me on LinkedIn. Just, yeah, Rachel Burnside. But I'd say you're better following the Uplift side of things for all the sort of latest news. And hopefully together we can help expand it and take it. It's going across the water for the first time, but let's try and make it even bigger and better. And then the plan, I guess, is to have different little like pockets of it happening all over the globe with different people leading the charge from each side of the world.
I'm excited. I'm excited to see where this conversation is a year from now. And then if you're interested in the event, you can go on any of the, like, you can go on Girls on Gravel Instagram. I'll actually pin the post to the top of the page so that it's easy to find the info about the event. So if you're already following us, that's probably the easiest way to find it. Is just go look for that pinned post. And if you're going to be in California, we will be excited to see you there.
Yeah. And a big thanks, Catherine, to you and the team for like making this a reality and really pushing it forward and bringing all your contacts together. Like my mind was blown by how many people were like engaging with the content. I was like, okay, this is good. You guys have got such a brilliant network. So together, I'm hoping for good things.
Yeah. We always call it the Gravel family, and it is. Sometimes slightly dysfunctional, but it is.
You know, I never heard you say that before, but that's exactly what I've got. I couldn't believe how many people were like tagging their friends and commenting on it and be like, yeah, this is brilliant. And then they all knew each other. And I was like, this is so cool.
Yeah. Well, thanks again for joining us, and I'll look forward to seeing you soon.
Nice. See you in a couple of weeks.
You have been listening to the Girls Gone Gravel podcast. This podcast is edited and produced by the team at Live Feisty Media. If you've enjoyed the show, please leave us a rating. It really helps other women find the podcast. And be sure to follow us at Girls Gone Gravel on Instagram or Facebook.